Om Vishnupada.
Canto 3, Chapter 12, Creation of the Kumaras and Others, Text 29. Tadadharame kritamatim, Vilokya pitaram sutta, Parichi mukya munayo, Pratyabodhayam
Nisham
unto him.
Adharame,
in the matter of immorality. Kritamatim,
the mind being so given.
Vilokya,
seeing thus.
Pitaram,
unto the Father.
Sutaha,
sons.
Marichi Mukyaha,
headed by Marichi.
Munayaha,
sages.
Vishrambhat,
with due respect.
Pratyabodhayan, submitted as follows. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Thus finding their father so deluded in an act of immorality, the sages headed by Marichi, all sons of Brahma, spoke as follows with great respect. Please repeat. Thus finding their father so deluded, in an act of immorality, the sages headed by Marichi,
all sons of Brahma,
spoke as follows with great respect. Purport. The sages like Marichi were not in the wrong in submitting their protests against the acts of their great father. They knew very well that even though their father committed a mistake, there must have been some great purpose behind the show, otherwise such a great personality could not have committed such a mistake. It might be that Brahma wanted to warn his subordinates about human frailties in their dealings with women. This is always very dangerous for persons who are on the path of self-realization. Therefore, great personalities like Brahma, even when in the wrong, should not be neglected. Nor could the great sages headed by Marichi show any disrespect because of his extraordinary behavior. Thus finding their father so deluded in an act of immorality, the sages headed by Marichi, all sons of Brahma, spoke as follows with great respect. So this is sometimes a quandary, how to deal with a senior person who is maybe perhaps exhibiting some unusual behavior or irregular behavior, something that perhaps is against the normal principles of devotional service, because we experience this in ISKCON a lot, somewhere or another, it's Kali Yuga, and these things are very difficult to avoid. Even advanced personalities sometimes can do something which is not normally acceptable, or which may even be completely immoral. How to deal with that? A famous case was when one GBC man in 1973-74, he was in New York at that time, so he was somehow or another doing so many nonsense things. And nobody said anything for a long time. And then gradually, finally, somebody came forward and reported it to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada sent some of the GBCs there to investigate. Then the man was exposed and he was removed from his service for some time. So afterwards, then Prabhupada wanted to know why the devotees had not said anything. And then the reply was that, well, he's a GBC. So, you know, they had that attitude of respect, but they didn't know how to exactly apply it. Because that was a fairly new circumstance in those days. The movement was just beginning. There were some prominent personalities that had been given some, you know, special encouragement by Srila Prabhupada. They had abilities themselves. They went out and did actually some extraordinary things in their preaching. But at the same time, they were also learners in Krishna consciousness. So there was a kind of an attitude of awe and reverence. You know, respect the sannyasis, respect the GBCs. Prabhupada emphasized that. This is part of our culture. If somebody is senior to you, then you have to show them all respect. If they are equal with you, then you make friends with them. And if they are junior to you, then you show them some mercy and some favor. So that way, this is the Vaishnava dealing, which is recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami. But sometimes, of course, we can misapply that, and you know, we can very stupidly allow somebody who is more senior to us to do something which is clearly wrong and not say anything because we're supposed to respect them. And if you respect them, you're not supposed to say anything. But actually, this is the example here, is that you can say something. Yeah, normally, because in Vedic culture, the father is offered all respects by the sons. The sons never answer back. Whatever the father says, they do. They accept that. That's generally the case, at least that's the culture. But here, of course, Lord Brahma, not only is he the father of all these sages, but he is the progenitor of the entire universe. He's constructing the whole universe, he's populating it. Everybody is subordinate to him. And nobody has the power that Lord Brahma has. Yeah, he's an extra, very extraordinary personality in all respects. But still, his sons, when they saw this unwanted or unusual behavior in his apparently becoming attracted to his own daughter, then very respectfully, they had the same respect, but they went to him and they requested him, don't do this. This is not very good. Your behavior is not to the right point here. And we want to bring that to your attention. So, one can point out faults in a senior, provided it's done in the right way. There is an etiquette that has to be maintained, one of respect, but at the same time, within that respectful dealings, you can criticize. Yeah? Or you can, well, because there's different kinds of criticism, but there's constructive criticism. That means that if somebody's actually doing something which is causing a disturbance, then no matter how exalted they are, you can go to them and very respectfully put it to them to consider their behavior and what the rectification can be. And you can make your different points. So if the dealings are all done with respect, then everybody maintains their position. Yeah? You don't become damaged by pointing out somebody's faults if it's done in a respectful and if it's done in a considerate way, yeah, for their benefit. Because if you approach somebody, even if he has a fault, but you just attack them, you know, and try to pull them down, oh, he's got some fault now, drag him down, expose him, you know, like this, then that lack of respect damages the person who's, you know, pointing out the defects, even if the defect actually exists. Yeah, that we've also seen, that when we've had difficulties sometimes with some of our leaders in ISKCON, then somebody's come forward and they expose it, they say something about it. But then because it's not done in a respectful way, the person who does the exposure often themselves suffers some reaction, Vaishnava Parad. Even if a person's at fault, it's possible to be offensive to them if you don't point out what the fault is in the proper way. All the dealings of the Vaishnavas have to be based on respect and nothing else. And even if one is nicely situated and he sees some fault in someone else, if he's disrespectful in the way that he deals with that, then he may himself become riddled with fault and fall down. You know, there's the Muni that was sitting there meditating and he saw Garuda attacking, or apparently attacking and eating the snakes. And he criticized him, he chastised him for it, not knowing who Garuda is. That Muni, what was it, Sabari Muni? Yeah. Then he fell down later on because of his offenses to Garuda. So from one perspective, he was thinking, you know, Garuda's at fault here, but because he had some envy in his heart, actually that's, you know, what it really gets down to. A lack of respect means envy. Yeah, because we don't respect Krishna, we come to the material world, we're envious of him. And that one original defect is the basis on which all other defects develop. If one can become non-envious, then he becomes respectful to all living beings. Because as soon as you become non-envious, and of course at the beginning of the Bhagavatam it says this narration is for the non-envious, not others. Others will not understand it. Why? Because all the dealings that are mentioned here in the Bhagavatam, they're all appreciable with an attitude of respect. It's glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you don't have a respectful attitude towards God, then how will you appreciate the glorification of Him? And then by hearing that glorification, you'll become critical. And then your offenses will multiply. Yeah. That's therefore in the 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy name, the 9th offense, yeah, not to speak the glories of the Lord to those persons who are unqualified. Yeah. Because if you do that, because they're envious, they'll simply take that, turn it around, and use it to criticize more. Yeah. And then they fall down by the weight of their offenses. Similarly, the first offense of chanting, yeah, not to criticize the devotees who dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord all around the world. Because that's an extraordinary endeavor. And even though apparently there may sometimes be some fault, but if the end result is that people are getting the holy name, they're getting an attraction to Krishna, then you can't fault it. And you have to be very, very careful about what you say about such persons. We were here in Mayapur in 1976, and Prabhupada had a visit from one of his godbrothers. So this godbrother was saying how, well, actually now, you know, some of the other godbrothers, they're beginning to appreciate what you're doing. So Prabhupada said, I don't care whether they appreciate it or not. He said, I'm doing it for the, you know, pleasure of my spiritual master, that's all. And so there was some discussion that how, you know, this other godbrother, he said, yes, yeah, some of them are actually, they're jealous on you. So then Prabhupada said, what can be done? He said, even if they're jealous, he said, does that mean that I have to stop? No. He said, actually, he said, I was surprised about their attitude. He said, we're spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, and they're envious. They're criticizing in so many different ways. Why? Is this a Vaishnava? He said, and who is criticizing? He said, if they're superiors, or even equals, they can criticize. He said, first of all, let them go out and do what I have done. Then they can criticize. But they're not doing anything and they want to criticize. He said, how is that? That the junior can criticize the senior? Yeah, that is not the adequate. So, special personalities, sometimes they do extraordinary things. Sometimes they do things which are very difficult to understand by an ordinary person. And the warning is, and if you see that, be very, very careful what you say or what you think. First of all, inquire and try to find out what is the reason for this. Is there a purpose behind it? Yeah. And if there is actually, you know, a fault, then there's a way of dealing with that. There's a way of approaching that person. There's a way of, you know, bringing their attention to the defect and then getting it corrected. But it requires respect. That's the whole point. All of our dealings, they have to always be done with very great respect. And we see that in Kali Yuga, of course, that's the one thing that's missing in practically all relationships. Nobody has any respect for anybody because everybody's driven, you know, by extreme lust, anger, greed, all these bad qualities. Their hearts are covered with that. And therefore, it's very difficult for them, you know, to show any kind of recognition to another person. in Kali Yuga, nobody likes to praise anybody else practically, unless they get some benefit for it. Of course, that's another thing. Yeah, I rub your back, you rub my back, and you know, we all sense gratified together. But to glorify God is the most difficult thing. Therefore, Krishna doesn't appear in Kali Yuga. Not as Krishna anyway. Because envy means imitation. If you see somebody doing something, then, oh, if I do that, you know, if I can somehow or another imitate that, I'll get all the praise and worship that this person's getting. So people like to imitate, and that's one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. It's another symptom of envy, to imitate great personalities. And of course, the forerunner to that is Pundraka, when he put two extra arms on his body, artificial arms, and pretended that he was Lord Vishnu. Yeah. So that's, you know, the beginning of Kali Yuga, that people want to pretend to be as good as God. So in this age then, Krishna doesn't appear as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, he appears as a devotee, because if you want to imitate anybody, you should imitate the devotee, but not God. Yeah. Gopi Jada Balava, Giribhara and Hari. The Sahajas, they want to imitate the Gopi Jana Balava, but they're hopeless when it comes to Giri Hari. Yeah, they can't lift Govardhan Hill, but they want to dance with their gopis in the forest at night time. So this is Kali Yuga. Even in devotional activities, this mentality of envy, imitation, disrespect, it comes in. It's a very difficult disease to deal with, actually. It's very, very deep rooted. And so we need a culture which enables us to become non-envious. Yeah, we need information, and we need examples of good behavior by which we can come to that platform where the heart actually becomes clear and purified. So that's the Sankirtan movement. That, you know, because we read about all the activities of Lord Chaitanya and his devotees in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's very wonderful. Why? Because it shows us all the different intimate dealings of the devotees in the Sankirtan movement, and we see the consequences of, you know, proper behavior, and we see the consequences of envious behavior. It's like Ramchandra Khan, when he saw Lord Nityananda, he was so envious of him when Lord Nityananda came into his village. The place where Lord Nityananda had sat down, afterwards when the Lord left, Ramchandra Khan was so envious that he had to wash the whole place. He thought that it was contaminated now, this, you know, personality, Nityananda, whoever he might be. He thinks he's a big man. I'll show he's nothing in my village. So he, with cow dung and everything, he tried to purify the area. So this is envy, because he was ruined because of that. Yeah. Later on, then he was busted by the taxman, and all his whole village was destroyed. So that's envy. It destroys you. It eats up the heart. It prevents one from seeing good in others. Another example of envy that Prabhupada gave was a little story that he used to. He was fond of telling this story about two friends, and they had a third friend who had, it was announced in the newspapers, now he'd become a high court judge. So one was telling the other, oh, you know so-and-so? Yeah. He just became a high court judge. Nah, no way. Yes, it's true. It's a fact. No, not him. No way. No, it's true. I read it in the newspapers. He said, high court judge. Oh, then he must not be getting any wages. In other words, he's doing it for free just to get a position. So even when he has to accept the fact, right, still he can't give him any credit. So we, you know, we have to recognize these tendencies. We all have them. We're all in the material world because, you know, we have these afflictions, and we have to work on removing them. So we need a culture where we can develop, you know, a non-envious attitude. And then with that mood, we can properly appreciate the glorification of the Supreme Lord. So in devotional service, it's service, that's what it is, with devotion. Yeah? If you have envy, you don't have devotion. It's the opposite end of the stick. So we try to develop a nice culture of serving all the Vaishnavas. Yeah? Even if we think that, you know, we're superior, somebody's inferior or junior, still the mood is service. I once asked Srila Prabhupada about that, that how can, of course, the acharya, the guru, he has to receive so much respect and worship, you know, from his disciples, and that's his duty to do that. He has to train his disciples to worship him as their spiritual master. It seems to be contrary to the very principle of humility, pridelessness, you know, and non-enviousness. I said, how is that? And Prabhupada explained, he said, no, the pure devotee, the guru, he's serving his disciples. Yeah. He's expending all of his energy and time, his, you know, mental energy, his physical energy, everything that he's got just to elevate these fallen souls to the position of becoming eternal servants of Krishna. So his mood is one of complete non-enviousness. Because if you're envious, you can't go out and preach for the benefit of others. It's not possible. You have to be so tolerant. Lord Rishabhdevi also says that if you want to go out and preach, you can't become angry. Yeah? If you go out, somebody attacks you or doesn't appreciate what you're doing, and you become angry, you've lost. Yeah? You've lost your rationale, you've lost your qualification for being out there, because preaching is an act of mercy. It's a gift. It's a selfless, you know, attempt to raise up somebody else at the expense of your own comfort, your own, you know, position, your own facilities, whatever. You have to be prepared to give everything to be a preacher. If you become angry, then that means that, you know, somebody's, you know, not appreciating. If you become angry, then you can't preach. Yeah. That anger pollutes the mind. It makes you feel some enmity towards another living being. If you're feeling enmity, enviousness, that's where it all comes from. So in order to be able to preach Krishna consciousness, one has to have this complete mood of service, devotional service. And even if one comes into an exalted position, like a spiritual master, still, when he's receiving all that worship, how does he avoid being affected by that, by thinking that I'm special? I remember one time one of my godbrothers had become a guru. He told me, he said, you know, getting all this worship, he said, it can spin your head. So if it's spinning your head, then you shouldn't be doing it, that's all. That means that, you know, you're not clear on what your purpose is. It means you're becoming affected, yeah, by that praise and worship. But one who is genuinely humble, whose heart is clear, that person can be praised by everybody in the world and he won't be affected by it. He'll never think that that's for me. He sees himself as a devotee of Krishna and he sees himself as a representative of Krishna. So he never thinks that this is all happening because I'm so wonderful, or because I'm so qualified. Yeah. He thinks himself to be the lowest of the low, practically. Just like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. At the end of every chapter, Krishna asks Kaviraj, he says, I'm less than a worm in stool. Yeah. And Prabhupada said he's actually thinking like that. Yeah. It's not he's just saying some platitudes or something, or making a show of it. He actually thinks like that. Yeah, I'm the lowest of the low. But still, whatever he knows, whatever he has to give to others. And by educating, by example, and by, you know, instruction, then other people can be purified. They can come to that same non-envious platform, but it has to be demonstrable. It has to be shown in one's actions. Then other people will take you seriously. So Prabhupada said, if you want to go out and preach, if we want to do some good to others, you actually have to have a genuine feeling of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. You know, I was mentioning the other week about we had this Sankirtan party that was going out in Australia. And the whole mood that they developed was that, you know, the Karmis are all just dirty, rotten meat eaters. You know, they're all offenders. We should just take them for whatever we can get. And they developed this whole philosophy, which was actually, you know, it wasn't based on compassion and mercy. It was based on, you know, we're better than you. We're devotees, you're not. That makes us better. Yeah, so, because that's not the position of the devotee. And that led to all kinds of abnormal behavior. You know, they developed this idea that, oh, everybody in the whole world, they're all thieves. Because actually everything belongs to Krishna. So they're not recognizing, you know, Krishna's proprietorship, the fact that he's the enjoyer. So we have to help them, you know, to give it back to Krishna by any means. So, you know, when they wanted food, this is a traveling Sankirtan party, they'd stop off in some town, they'd send one of the girls into the supermarket and she'd shoplift. Right? She'd just start stealing everything that they wanted and then walk out with it. Because eventually they got caught. And, you know, we had another devotee. He happened to find somebody's credit card. Right? He went in some place and the person left his credit card on the counter. So he immediately took it and went around on a shopping spree. Right? Now he did it. What he did was he bought all these, you know, silver trays and cups and things and gave them to the deities. Oh, very nice. 2 days later, the police come around, walk into the temple, confiscate all the silverware from the, you know, the paraphernalia room and arrest this fellow and off he goes. So, you know, we have to be very careful about, you know, how we deal with, you know, our position as being devotees. Yeah, we can't become puffed up and proud about it. Because that is a symptom of envy of other living beings. Yeah, it's like a punitive kind of attitude towards other living beings. And if we have still, you know, those kinds of contaminations within our hearts, then when we approach others, even in the name of preaching, then so many mistakes will be made. Yeah, there'll be so many distortions of the philosophy to justify what I'm doing. Yeah, to make it right for me to take this or do that or abuse this one or abuse. No. We can't use the philosophy in that way. It can only be understood properly if we have this underlying mood of respect. Yeah. If we have this very humble attitude. I'm just a servant of Krishna. All others are servants of Krishna. Let me help them. They don't know that they're the servants of Krishna, so they're unnecessarily suffering. So let me go out and let me try to do some good to them. Yeah. Prabhupada told me that one time in Bombay. He said, I never went to the West to become successful. In other words, he didn't go out of any personal motivation that he wanted to achieve something. He said, I just went there because my Guru Maharaj requested it. That's all. He said, and whatever has come, that is by his mercy. He said, and I'm here. He said, I'm simply sitting here, eating and sleeping, and I'm chastising you, like anything. Yeah, he said, but anyway, he said, I'm just simply praying to Krishna that I can't do any good for them, but you please do some good for them. So, that was Prabhupada's mood. Even he was thinking, I'm not qualified, I can't do anything, you know, for all these different nice devotees. But Krishna, you do something. So he has his attachment to Krishna. He has his feeling of love and devotion for Krishna, and therefore automatically he has feelings of love and devotion towards Krishna's parts and parcels. And therefore he's able to act genuinely for their benefit. That was one of the first things that I felt when I met Prabhupada, that here's a person I can trust. Yeah, we felt completely sheltered when we met Prabhupada. We knew he wasn't going to cheat us. We knew that what he was giving us was for our benefit. Even sometimes he asked us to do what we thought were difficult things. But we knew that was for our benefit. And sometimes when he chastised us, we knew that was for our benefit. So we accepted that, and it was actually a very purifying experience. because the end result was that we actually came a little bit closer to Krishna. We got a little bit better understanding, you know, of what it means to be a devotee, what it means to be a servant of Krishna. That was what Prabhupada was training us for. And sometimes devotees that weren't in the proper mood, if they got too close to Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, because if you get close to someone, then there's a familiarity in dealings. And that's always dangerous. At least in this age, you become too familiar with someone, familiarity breeds contempt. Just like these sons of Brahma, this is their father, they're the sons. Naturally, they have very familiar dealings with him. But no contempt. Yeah, just an attitude of respect, always. But sometimes we saw that when devotees came in too much or too close a contact with Srila Prabhupada, then they would become careless. And then they'd start to see Prabhupada after some time as if he was an ordinary man. And then if Prabhupada happened to chastise them for their own good, then they would resent that. And then from that resentment they would fall down. And there are instances when I was with Prabhupada, one of his secretaries, he wasn't chanting his rounds. He was busily engaged all day long, you know, typing and transcribing Prabhupada's tapes. And he was a very intelligent man, very expert in so many different ways. But he was only chanting two rounds a day. So he was doing everything else, but he neglected that one essential instruction of his spiritual master. And as a result, there was still some pride in his heart. Yeah. That he was thinking, oh, I'm very intelligent. I can do this, I can do that. So one time he did something. It was a major thing. He did something on his own without asking Prabhupada first. And then when he came in afterwards and told Prabhupada what he'd done, Prabhupada was furious. He yelled at him. He yelled so loudly. I was in the other room. I ran in to see what was going on. Prabhupada was just chastising him. Yeah. So I sat and watched that, and this man apparently took it. But then later on, within a few months, he'd left the movement. First of all, he left Prabhupada's party, then he left the movement. And for some years, he really, really struggled. And maybe 18 years later, I got a chance to talk with him. And he told me that when Prabhupada chastised him, at that one moment, he said, when he chastised me, he said, it cracked my heart. Yeah. He said, I think that, you know, Prabhupada's qualified in so many ways. He is obviously completely on the spiritual platform. And he knows, you know, the Shastra like this. But he said, I don't think that he knows how to deal with people properly sometimes. So that was the pollution that entered in, because the pollution was already there. And in the circumstance, when he got chastised, he couldn't appreciate it was for his benefit. Because he had some envy in his heart. And therefore he started to think there was something wrong with Prabhupada. Not him. Right? Or even if there's something wrong with me, it's not entirely my fault. You know, you've got a fault too. This is the mentality. So he actually developed an offensive mentality towards his superior, towards his spiritual master. He thought that he'd done something wrong in chastising him. Yeah, that if he had spoken nicely to me, I would have understood. Why did he have to yell? It cracked my heart. So then we had a long conversation. I explained to him that you're a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. You have to do whatever your spiritual master tells you to do. It's all for your benefit. He's not there, you know, to exploit our, you know, energy and good wishes for his own benefit. He's engaging us, you know, for our own purification. I said, your spiritual master should be able to tell you anything, and you should accept it for your own good. They said, oh, well, you know. He said, you were always able to take the chastisement and, you know, and think it was beneficial. He said, but I couldn't do that. So anyway, we had a long, long talk about the whole thing. And know, I tried to put things in perspective for him, and I told him, I said, Prabhupada has the right to tell you whatever he likes. You were working in his service. You did something without asking him. Even though you acted sincerely, it wasn't what Prabhupada wanted. I said, why didn't you just go to Prabhupada to start with and ask him, do you want me to do this? I have this idea. Shall I do this? I said, why didn't you do that? He couldn't. He had no reply to that. Anyway, so we discussed it. Then two or three years later, I saw him again. And then he came up and he was very happy. He was nice and bright. He told me, he said, you'd be very happy to know now that I've sorted out my relationship with Prabhupada. He said, I accept that he was, he had every right to chastise me. I was completely in the wrong. He said, and now, everything's going very well again. So he rectified it. But for 18 years, he'd been carrying that in his heart, that his spiritual master had done something wrong in chastising him. So we have to be very, very careful in our relationships, what the condition of our own heart is first. Before we start looking at others and making judgments about whether they're doing something right or wrong. Even if they are doing something wrong. But there may be a higher purpose for that. Even if there's not a higher purpose, still if they're an exalted personality, they didn't get that position for nothing. They're highly qualified. They've done something to win the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That has to be respected also. Even if he needs correction. But still you have to respect. No, he was recognized by Krishna, by his guru, like this. So you have to always, retain that. But if we don't have a clear heart ourselves, we can't see others in the proper way. That's the point. So the first thing, therefore, Lord Chaitanya said to go out and preach, first of all, he said, make yourself perfect. Yara Jaka Tarika Krishna Upadesh. If you want to give Krishna Upadesh to others, but first of all, you make yourself perfect. And then you can go out and you can help others to perfect their lives. But if we don't have, purity in our own hearts, then how can we make that available to others? It's not possible. So if we want to be effective in our preaching work, in our practice of Krishna consciousness, the first thing that we have to do is work on ourselves, always. And always cultivate this mood of respect to all living beings. And then if we have that respectful mood, then even if we make a mistake, we'll be forgiven. I discovered that when I joined Prabhupada's party, that very quickly I started making a lot of offenses because I was new to the service and because I was a new devotee practically. I didn't know how everything needed to be done. I was not familiar exactly with everything that Prabhupada required to be done. And so naturally I was making some offenses. So within a couple of days I had this realization that if I'm going to stay with Prabhupada, I'm going to offend him. So that gives me two choices. I can either give up the service and not, remain at a respectful distance so that I don't make any offenses. Or, I can try to learn from the mistakes that I'm making and improve. And I saw that, when I did make some mistakes, Prabhupada chastised me. If I did it once and then I learned from that, Prabhupada never mentioned it again. He would never bring up the past. If he saw that you were making a bit of progress, even if you made a big mistake. One time in Vrindavan, before I became Prabhupada's servant, I got in a physical fight, with one Bengali that came to the temple there, and it ended up with me physically, engaging in a little exchange with him and having him thrown out. It wasn't without provocation, I have to say that. But when Prabhupada heard about it and he called me in, and he, first of all, without making any judgments, he'd obviously heard something, but without making any judgments, he said, so what happened? He let me speak. And then he accepted that I'd been, very strongly provoked. But at the same time, he said, you have committed a great offense. He said, now you have to go out and find this boy and bring him back and apologize. So somehow or another, that was accomplished. I didn't find him, but he came back and he apologized, and then I apologized. And we had to do that in front of Srila Prabhupada also. So anyway, that was virtually the first time I'd had any real personal dealings with Prabhupada. I was the temple commander in Vrindavan. He called me, into his room, and I was thinking, why is Prabhupada calling me? I've never had, never had any kind of personal service that I was done. But because of this incident, I knew actually it must be because of this fight that I got into. And it was. So that was the first time really that I got called into Prabhupada's room. And it was to be told that you've committed a great offense. 2 months later, I was Prabhupada's servant. So how is that? Because Prabhupada overlooked the offense because it was rectified. And he saw, okay, this boy, he's crude. He doesn't know anything, but he's sincere, that's all. He's trying his best. And because I learned, from that, then Prabhupada was perfectly willing to bring me in and give me an even more intimate service than I already had before. So I learned from that if your attitude is right, you've got to make mistakes, we're going to commit offenses, it's inevitable, it's not possible to live in this world without making some offense to someone. But if we have the right mood of humility, then it can be easily rectified. That's the point. So when Prabhupada saw that we were sincere and, trying to improve, he was happy with that. And the offenses were not, counted to be very significant. But if we made offenses and we didn't try to improve, then he would get really angry. If he told you to do something once and then you did it again, then he could see you're not listening, then he would really chastise you. Yeah. But the point was that I knew I'm going to survive as Prabhupada's servant doing this kind of intimate service only if I'm very humble, because that's my only protection against offenses. Yeah. It's your only protection if we're just very, very humble and we have this mood of respect. So this is the basis then of all our dealings. It's mentioned here very nicely that great personalities like Brahma can never be disrespected or neglected. It doesn't mean that they can't be approached and that you can't discuss with them some problem that you may have with their behavior. But if you haven't the right mood to do it, then it will, the dealings will be successful. And if we don't have the right mood, even if you get with an exalted personality, if your mentality is not right, then inevitably some offense will come in, and then you will suffer the consequences for that. Okay, so we'll finish at that point. Madhaji, any question?
Yes, Guru. Isn't also that, let's say someone makes a mistake, you see that. If we would not mention it,
The question is, if we see somebody doing something wrong and we don't say anything, do we become implicated in the resultant reactions of their offensive behavior? And generally that's a fact. Even if you can't approach a person directly yourself, maybe the difference between you is too big, but then approach somebody who can approach that person and tell them. It's not doing a person any favors if we see that they're having problems and we don't say anything. If we just sit passively by and let them go to hell. That's, Vaishnavs are proactive in all respects. They're always looking, to improve things, to enable a person to better serve Krishna in every respect. You see that with Srila Prabhupada. He was always pushing us. Always. Do this, do that, go out all over the world, spread. I mean, he gave us things to do that were practically impossible for people of our caliber, and quality to do. But we did it because you know, we have faith in Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was very proactive, you know. In Kali Yuga, everything degrades very quickly. And if you're not active in, you know, trying to rectify things, you get overwhelmed. So, not for ourselves, but not just for ourselves, but for others also. We have a society whereby we help each other, you know, to improve. And if we see that somebody's having a problem, is struggling, you know, it's our duty to bring it to their attention. It's our duty to step forward. And if we don't, then we become guilty of neglect. That's another form of abuse, by the way. Yeah, if you look at all the different kinds of abuses, nowadays, you know, they have these things about abuse. One of the first kind of abuse is just neglect. You don't look after somebody nicely. You know, you don't help to protect their spiritual lives. So, you know, we try as Vaishnavas to help each other. That's compassion, that's mercy. It's not wrong to see somebody's faults and then help them to correct it, as long as it's done in the right mood. I have a difficulty understanding your accent.
You said that Lord Chaitanya has told that first of all we have to work on ourselves, first of all we have to clear ourselves before we can teach. But we see when we come into Krishna consciousness, within 1 or 2 years we get a faith and we know the philosophy. So we are ordered to preach out and we are not so clean, and obviously so many, like we get intricate with pride and so many narakas are building up.
Right.
So, what's the way out? I mean, on one side they told the creation, on the other side they told the first 14 years.
Right, so the question is that on the one hand, Lord Chaitanya says we should perfect our own lives, and then we can go out and preach. On the other hand, we're practically in ISKCON sent out to preach from the day that we walk in the door. Yeah? So how does that work? And I asked Prabhupada that one time when we were in Bombay, that, you know, in according to the Shastra, it says a third class person should not attempt to preach, because then their activities will just cause a disturbance in the world. Just like this example of this Babaji that introduced the Nitai Gaur Adi Shine Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram. So it was a very widespread movement. He was considered a big preacher, but what he was preaching was actually, you know, it was apasiddhanta. It was against the actual conclusion. Adirodha, it means it will be spoiled. So if you're not actually qualified, don't preach, because what you say and do, you know, will actually mislead people, or it will cause a disturbance. But then where does that put us? Do we wait until, you know, we're merging into Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan before we decide to go out and preach? I mean, what level of perfection is required? So Prabhupada, when I asked Prabhupada that question, that you're always telling us to go out and preach, but then you also say that third class persons shouldn't preach. So I said, we're all third class. I said, at least I'm third class. So I said, where does, you know, how do we understand that? Prabhupada said, I am preaching. You just do what I tell you. So, you know, that's the proper understanding. We preach on the orders of, you know, a person who is pure. And our only qualification is that we have to be a bit sincere, that's all. We, you know, Prabhupada knew we have so many faults and problems. But the activity that we're engaged in is so auspicious that all the inadequacies and mistakes that we made, they weren't actually considered to be very important. The real thing was that we were actually very sincerely going out, chanting in the streets, selling his books, opening temples, doing deity worship. None of these things were done perfectly. But Prabhupada always encouraged us to do it. When Prabhupada installed Radha Gopinath in Sydney, he could see there was not a single person in the holy temple that was fit to worship a deity. They practically didn't even know what a deity was, most of them. You know. But Prabhupada brought Radha Gopinath. He had them installed. And then the next year when he came back, you know, we had another place that we got from where they were originally installed. We just built this nice altar, and we got a few more Brahmins, and, you know, there was actually quite a nice degree of worship that was going on. So when Prabhupada came back and he saw the deities for the first time, it was like a year after he'd installed them, he told us this story. He said, actually, when I installed Radha Gopinath here, he said, I knew, he said, I prayed to him that now I'm leaving you with these Malechas and Yavanas. So he said, now you kindly look after yourself. Yeah, you train them. You give them the intelligence so that they can worship you properly. He said, and now I can see that he's doing that. So Krishna was doing it, but the devotees, Prabhupada was pleased with the devotees because they were sincere enough that they were trying their best to improve. Yeah. So that's our position. There are many examples, but that's the whole point, is that by trying, then you will improve, as long as the mood is proper. So when Prabhupada gave different, you know, duties and responsibilities to his disciples, he knew that we weren't qualified. He knew that. But there was a qualification that he saw that overwhelmed all the disqualifications. And that was the sincerity that the devotees had in trying to please Prabhupada and do what he wanted. So that's all you can do. You see many letters where Prabhupada says, just go out, do the needful, you try your best and Krishna will give you the intelligence. You'll see that many times. Krishna will give you the intelligence if you just try sincerely. So that's our process. Yeah. And that's really the perfection. That is the perfection. That mood of humility. And just being sincere. Just trying your best to do whatever you can do. Alright? Gaurav.
Thank you for leaving class. Is it an act of respect to oblige an ISKCON leader to publish his fall down on the internet or to publish it on his behalf?
I knew this was going to come up. It depends. There's two considerations. There's the consideration of the general condition of the body of devotees. Yeah, especially in an institutional situation. And then there's the consideration of the personal needs of the person that's having the problem. And they have to be balanced out. Now Prabhupada's method of dealing with, you know, leaders that he had that were having difficulties was that, you know, he would personally try to rectify them. He would call them, or he would, you know, wait for some time till he could see them, and then, you know, he would try to find out what the real problems are, then, you know, encourage them, fix them up, let them come and travel with him, whatever. At the same time though, he also said that devotees shouldn't follow somebody that's misbehaving. Yeah. The same man that became Prabhupada's secretary that I mentioned before and then left, then previously he was in a country, he was preaching there, he was the main preacher, but he was only chanting two rounds, he wasn't going to any of the program like that. And so the next GBC that came into that area, he wrote to Prabhupada and he said, well, you know, all the devotees were quite disturbed about the previous guy's behavior. And, you know, there's a feeling that they don't want to follow, you know, somebody like that, who's not setting the standard themselves. And Prabhupada wrote back and he said, yes, he said, naturally they won't want to follow them. He approved of it. Yeah, that they didn't want to just accept any nonsense, you know, just because the man's in a leading position. So you have to balance the two. At the same time, Prabhupada was dealing with the same man and encouraging him. All right, you've had this difficulty, but go on. You know, do this preaching or do that preaching. So, in an institution like ISKCON, where we are prominent, you know, we are taken as examples, you know, for the general population. It's a fact, especially here in India, you see everybody has such a high respect of ISKCON and ISKCON devotees. They become shocked sometimes when they see an ISKCON devotee misbehaving. Yeah. So we have a responsibility to maintain a certain standard, to maintain the faith of, you know, other persons in the institution and in the individuals in the institution. And if somebody's misbehaving who is very prominent, you can't hide that. It's not possible. And if you do, try to keep it quiet in the hope that, all right, we can adjust this and fix this up. Later on, somebody else is going to come along and then they'll accuse you that, oh, you're just, you know, it's the old boys club. You're just trying to maintain all your friends, you know, come what may, like this, and you're cheating us. So, you know, it's a very, very tricky process to know how to deal with, you know, a leading person who is having genuine difficulties and how to adjust for that. So we want to try to achieve both things. Maintain, you know, the faith of the general devotees, but at the, you know, and maintain the standards, but at the same time, try to help that person as well. Now, specifically, how to help them depends on their own individual circumstances. You know, there's no, like, there's some general standards, but within that, everything has to be tailor-made. We're people. Yeah, we have individual needs and qualifications, and we have to be dealt with in a very personal way also. So it's, you know, it's always going to be difficult, and you're never going to get it so that everybody's happy with it. But you have to try sincerely to do your best, you know, for the situation, for the devotees that are in that situation, and for the individual. And that means, you know, again, that mood of respect has to be there. Not that, oh, he's got a fault now. Drag him down, advertise it. There is a group of devotees that have left ISKCON because they saw so many faults, you know, in sannyasis or gurus or GBCs or this one and that one. And they use that as a platform to try to wreck everything and introduce their own philosophy and their own. Right? So as soon as somebody has any problem, immediately they, oh, just see, Harry Ball, another one's fallen down. Yeah, they're actually like that. They're actually happy to see a senior devotee, you know, have a problem. Because, oh, now we can, you know, take advantage of that. That is not a Vaishnava attitude. And it will never help those persons to become dear to Krishna, that's for sure. Yeah. So, we have to be very careful how we deal with these things. We do live in an age, like you mentioned, the internet. Things do fly around all over the place, and you're almost forced to make an official announcement sometimes, just so that, you know, misconceptions and misbehavior is not spread around in its place. You know, people get confused. So there's always somebody there that wants to take advantage of the situation to make the worst of it. So sometimes you have to make an official announcement just so that everybody, the innocent devotees, are aware of what the actual facts are. You know, you can't cover it up. You know, we live in an age now where, you know, something happens here in this room right now is being broadcast, or could be broadcast, you know, in 50 or 100 places around the world, or 1,000 places around the world, even as it's happening. So, you know, it's very difficult. If you go back a couple of hundred years before the age of electricity, you know, something happened in a village somewhere, it stayed there. That's all. It didn't spread all over the planet, you know. But now it's different. So, you know, you've got to deal with the current circumstance also. Sorry for that.
when you were relating this history about this one devotee had a longer than when he went to New York, but also the side of that story where not only was Prabhupada he said the devotees had spoken up, but then some devotees spoke up inappropriately without compassion for this person and just kind of laughing all over the place and falling down. And then Prabhupada was so furious at that. And he said, now you made it impossible, and it's not impossible. It's difficult for him to come back.
Yeah, actually he said impossible. Yes. Yeah, it's really difficult to know how to deal with those situations. And the previous one in New York in 73-74, when it all came out, you know, what that man was doing, and then the devotees, you know, it came out that the devotees had known about it for at least a year or something and didn't say anything. And then Prabhupada said, that's mine. He said the devotees were in Maya for not speaking out and not bringing it, you know, to the attention of the other, you know, leaders. All right, we have to finish that. It's getting late. Shall the Prabhupada key, John?
I think the video audio stream will start today, so the lectures are on the internet. The what? The lectures you can hear on the internet.
Oh, they are.
They start today.